Wrapping the kids out of their coats, the way the babies haven't been born.
Welcome to Teacher Besties, a podcast for teachers. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Kelly. On this week's agenda, we will give an update on the Detroit public school system. We will talk about a new possible law in Mississippi that may decide to grade the parents of their students. We will also discuss the awkward idea of sex ed in school and what this generation maybe perhaps talks about in sex ed. I don't really know how to say that without sounding awkward.
The idea that sex ed should be taught in school.
Yeah, that, and maybe some other things that are unique to our students' age group, and lots of other stuff.
So how was your week?
Oh, my week was good. My students are writing a lot, so I've taken up this new, attempt this year to not grade at home, which
is... Oh, me too. How's that going for you?
It seems like it would be impossible as an English teacher, and I don't want to make it seem like that is a very realistic goal for most English teachers, but I have just kind of said, that's what I'm going to do. I want to prioritize my time with my family. It's working for me. The upside is more time with my family, and I don't resent my students for writing bad papers when I've spent all of my personal time grading them. But obviously the downside is you have to have more instructional time that is self-guided. I've had them do a lot of close reading type assignments while I'm grading. So mm-hmm. they work together in a group, which obviously takes a lot of front loading, but it's been working out. How's your grading working?
Or not? I'm not doing that.
Not grading.
It's taking me longer to grade assignments. Mm-hmm. But I really don't feel bad about it. My prep is a block prep. So when I can actually focus, I get a lot done. But usually it just takes me a lot longer to get things done, and there's really no alternative. It is what it is. And I value, even though I don't have a kid, I really value my decompression time after work. So, this year has just been a lot of me taking long walks with the dog and making nicer dinner.
Yeah. Things that you should be entitled to do.
Absolutely. Sometimes reading a book.
Yeah, I think that it's important for students to realize how when they see me grading, I actually think that maybe they appreciate it a little more. And then I also think, not that this will ever change anything, but just the idea of class sizes and how it impacts your grading, and how quickly students get their feedback back.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely matters.
I'm going to do a flipped classroom legitimately for the first time tomorrow, where I'm finally doing some ed puzzle videos, which I have not used before, but a colleague says they're kind of great.
I'm not really familiar with them. What are they like?
So it's a website where you can import videos from YouTube or TED Talks, or even they have a direct link to, Crash Course, which I don't know if the guy does Crash Course for English, but there's John Green, the guy who wrote The Fault Is in Our Stars. He does Crash Course history videos, and he's awesome because he talks as fast or faster than I do. And so what you can do is you can embed questions into the video, and students, if they have accounts, can answer the questions through the account. But for me, I'm doing it old school where they answer on a separate piece of paper. And so there's two videos that I'm having them watch in school, and they're the hardest homework ever was to bring in headphones tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'll bring in a few extra pairs because
someone will
would be terribly bothersome if they didn't have. And so after they're done watching the videos, and we're going to have a discussion about, we're talking about the Congo Wars.
Uh-huh.
So the 1994 and 1996 wars in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah.
And should be good. I'll let you know how it works out.
Cool. Is that something that you have to have a Chromebook for, or can they use their phones?
I'm sure they could use their phones. I would just maybe be concerned about data and phones and watching videos. But if your school has Wi-Fi and they can connect to that, I think it wouldn't really be an issue.
Okay, That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you, this is totally random, but did you see the Google Doodle thing today?
No, I didn't. Should
it's
I go
so
open it?
It's so pretty. You should see it. And it like drew my attention. So I clicked on it and it was actually drawn by a 10th grader. I had no idea, but I guess they do a contest called Doodle for Google and they picked a student that they, the question was, to create something that like answers what makes me, me. And that is what the student drew. And it's a, like a beautiful picture of an African-American girl. And there's like a bunch of symbols like invoking, it says that she was invoking Black Lives Matters, but there's just like a lot of like cool, pretty stuff. I think her name, I read her name as Akila Johnson.
Yes.
But
I'm staring at it right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I was, it was totally random, but today I was like, oh, that's really nice. You know, sometimes like every once in a while you click on it cause it looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, oh, cool. High school students, they got to create something. They picked one. I had no idea this contest existed.
I think I've seen ones drawn by kids before, but I just kind of were like, oh, that's cute. They draw better than I do.
Yeah. What else? Oh, I also noticed that Seth Rogen and his wife, Lauren Miller Rogen, they donated a bunch of money to the Sonoma County schools through Donors Choose last week. And I looked into it a little bit more, and I think it was part of, like, Stephen Colbert did this a few months, years, I don't know how long ago.
A while ago.
Yeah. So then I clicked on it, and I was like, oh, this is not necessarily just Seth Rogen. It's, like, people everywhere in every county that have money. So maybe I should get on Donor's Choose and not just have a profile.
I actually have an account and a profile, but, like, I don't know what to post there. And I feel like, by comparison, my school is by far more well off, and do I actually have a right to ask for people to donate things to me? Like, I can't, I don't know what I need that I don't have.
I mean, I think you have a right. I definitely agree with you in terms of like your school, you know, you have more resources than a lot of other schools, but I think part of the idea behind it is just the principle that that teachers should not have to be paying for a lot of these supplies in order to do really awesome things with their students, or even just to do the things that, you know, they need in order for their classroom to run. So I think that if you're doing it with that intention, you don't have to feel guilty about it.
So at one point I wanted to get a set of atlases, but then I realized that I have old atlases, which are okay. I mean, fine. Yugoslavia is in there and it shouldn't be, but for the most part, pretty much everything else is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the internet. So like if they want to look up a map that's current, like the internet does that just fine.
Yeah. For me, the thing I always want is, you know, different kinds of books, like class sets of books, so that I can change up the curriculum, but also like it's a pretty easy way to diversify the books that we read in English because, you know, let's be honest, like most of them are just like old white dudes that are dusty from like 1970 something or a lot older. And, you know, the English curriculum in America has not changed much in a long time. So it's like,
no,
without having to get your whole department to approve everything, it's a nice way to do that. And then I also really like to get those Dover editions of Shakespeare. Anytime
is
I do a play.
Is that the dual reading? Like
no,
the
that's,
plain English?
No, that's like the cheater version,
is,
which is No Fear Shakespeare. But no,
what's
they're just
the Dover edition?
Dover is just like, they're really, really small and cheap. It's just the play. And they're $2. So you can buy, like in theory, you can buy them for your students and let them annotate them and then get a new set every year.
Ah.
So I usually get away with that because I ask my students to, like, you know, please, pretty please pay $2 for the Dover edition. And then I, like, you know, supplement for the few students that don't do it.
Yeah.
But it makes it nice because, like, what is the point of reading Shakespeare other than enjoying it? It's to, like, you know, close read the language, and it's really hard to do that without being able to write on it.
Absolutely. Let's update on Detroit.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So last week I sent you in like a fury something with the headline to the effect that like...
Detroit schools are in financial crisis and won't be able to pay teachers after April 8th.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. So I was like, not okay. You cannot expect teachers to go to work if they're not getting paid. They have bills to pay.
No, absolutely. And I feel like we should maybe comment on the fact that right now Detroit public schools are being run at a state level, but there's talk about like switching to like federal funding completely because it's an emergency situation.
Yeah.
Which, duh, it's an emergency situation. But you have an update on what actually is going on now.
Yeah. So my update is that the Michigan House approved $50 million in funding to pay for the Detroit public schools to keep them open and to keep teachers being paid. So yay, that is good.
Does that mean they're going to do like infrastructure improvements?
Oh, I have no idea about that. I mean, it's $50 million, which may sound like a lot, but I'm going to guess in schools it's like nothing. So, you know, I think that this is kind of a Band-Aid. It's an ongoing story. This was actually just updated 6 days ago. So, I think that it's probably to keep the lights on and to keep the paychecks going out. I don't see anything in, you know, what I'm reading about actually like updating infrastructure. I see something to the degree the Senate has been working on a package for this Detroit public schools since late last year, that will deal with the debt. And also, let's see, what else? The proposal is going to cost $715 million, but I have no idea what that proposal maintains. It doesn't really say, so.
I hope it means, like, knocking down buildings and making new ones with windows.
Yeah. So, yeah, basically this article that I'm reading from the Detroit Free Press says that, like, the $50 million is a supplemental Band-Aid and, like, it's a great first step, but they really need to infuse this school system with money.
Okay, let's talk about Mississippi for a second. So it must have been a week ago I found this funny headline, Mississippi House passes bill requiring teachers to grade parents. And at first I was super excited because it said on the report card there is a spot for teachers to grade parents on their level of activism or helping the schools. Mm-hmm. And at first I thought like, man, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. I would love to be able to grade parents on how quickly they respond to me and if they do respond. But then I realized that it might not be so amazing.
Uh-huh.
Like, in theory, my very strong sense of justice was like, yes, this would be great. But not all parents have the ability to help out. And I think they're, like, different levels of helping.
Yeah.
And so, like, maybe helping with your child's homework at home but not being able to be, like, one of those elementary, like, class parents where they come in all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, that's totally fine. I don't know. There has to be some sort of like balance. And then also, I know there are like a lot of thoughts in my head about this. I realized like they should be allowed to grade teachers too. Parents should be allowed to say, and students, like there should be some sort of like public grading system. I know that's like a little extreme.
You're making faces at me. At you right now. So, you know me, I'm going to come hard with...
All right, let's hear it.
I mean, okay, first of all, let's take a look at some of the categories for how they're grading them.
Yeah, fine. The categories were
What intense. Were those categories?
I don't see categories, Kelly. I see what happens, like, which schools should be required to grade parents.
Oh, okay.
And what was also included in the bill.
Okay, I thought I saw things about that they were basically assessing the parent on, like, their participation, their ability to make sure their student gets to school, right? So it was
on... Oh, wait, here. I found it. Hold on. Would mandate that each child's report card, parents would be graded on their responsiveness to communication with teachers, mm-hmm. the student's completion of homework, readiness for tests, and frequency of absences and tardiness.
Yeah, okay. So in theory, all of these things sound wonderful. You know, if you're a parent that lives in a two-parent household with plenty of disposable income, yada, 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 you should definitely be doing those things for your child. But, you know, the reality is that I'm going to guess that the people in Mississippi that are going to feel the brunt of this are not, you know, the privileged parents that I just described, but are rather maybe the single mom working two jobs and not getting by.
No, I already said that. I agreed that it was maybe a little too extreme.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just see this turning into, like, parent shaming, which is, like, do we need any more parent shaming? I'm going to guess if your kid's not doing good in school, you probably don't feel great about it.
No, absolutely. Also attached to the bill, which was really interesting, that, like, if a school district received a C or a lower on the state...
evaluation.
The State Department evaluation, that... every night, a child had to be assigned mandatory homework, that they had to be taught both proper manuscript and cursive handwriting, that they would have daily reading and separate writing assignments. They would have to read at least one book per month and write a book report on it. Mandate participation for parents in some sort of school function. Have an established dress code for teachers. Mandate school uniforms. And then initiate two parent-teacher conferences per 9-week terms. So all of those things were included in this bill. It's still pending. It hasn't passed yet, by the way.
I think I find it very ironic that it's coming from Mississippi.
Yeah. You know, that's what made me giggle so much.
A state that quite often, you know, is not so super friendly towards women and children and also, like, not super, like, pro-government, like, both of these things combined. Like, I don't know where this is coming from, Mississippi, except for maybe who you're directing this towards indirectly. So I'm going to leave it at that in terms of what I think about this. I think it's a slippery slope, and I think this is the kind of thing that really, like, all of the ideas and intentions behind it are good, but, like, I don't think it's going to actually enact any sort of positive change. I think that these kinds of things, when enacted between teacher and parent or the school community at large, is probably the most successful than when a state says, we're going to reprimand you for not doing this.
Yeah, I agree. But, in theory, it seems awesome. In practice, very scary.
Yeah, I mean... obviously, we all know that, like, as teachers, it's super frustrating when you know that this child is not being supported by their parent. But it's also really hard, I think, to just simplify it that way, you know?
Yeah, and also, like, what good would, like, is there, like, some sort of incentive tied to the grade? Like, what good would it do to grade a parent? Yeah. Like, would they get, like, a letter, like, a nasty letter in the mail? Like, you're not helping your child's education.
Exactly.
You stink.
Which is why I think it's just, like, parent shaming, because there is no real reward except for maybe you're going to brag at, like, your PTA meeting. But,
well, like, there's a huge disincentive. Like, if you think about the money spent on stamps, the person power to create the letters, and, like, the amount of time required for each teacher to grade each parent, especially at a high school level. Okay.
Yeah.
Mississippi, we disagree.
We disagree. Oh my gosh. Okay. So this was actually, I wanted to talk about this, and it's kind of been on my radar for a while.
Wait, can we pause for a sec and talk about our miscommunication with regard to this article?
Oh.
Where I skimmed the title and I thought it was about prom.
Yeah.
And it's not.
It's about porn and how it is influencing the current generation and, like, their understanding of sex education. So the title of this New York Times op-ed is When Did Porn Become Sex Ed?
And I thought this was, like, preparing to go to prom, which clearly is not correct.
So I'm like, you want to talk about a prom article? I don't see the prom article. You didn't email it to me. Like 15 different threads later, I'm like, oh, we're typing the wrong word.
Sorry.
So embarrassing. Okay.
No, for me, not for you.
Well, I felt bad too because I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. You're like, you just sent it to me. Like, you seemed so frustrated. Like, I'm such a dummy.
I guess my glasses weren't on and I was trying to do like three other things at once. So whatever. It made for some laughs later.
Okay, rewind. Okay. So why are we going to talk about porn on a school podcast? Not exactly directly, but
That's an excellent question.
Here's the thing. So I'll be honest. There's a lot of times where I'm really concerned about sort of, you know, when you see students having conversations, you know, you're always going to see high school students having conversations about relationships. They have their phones attached to their hand all the time. So anytime there's a downtime or, you know, if you're with them on like something that is a little less formal where they might be on their phones. Mm-hmm. I've had like a lot of experiences this year and in previous years where like, you know, I can't directly address it, but I feel like there's snickering and talking and things that are mostly young men, but young women as well, like talking about, you know, sexual things, and it like really disturbs me. Like it what bothers me is I feel like they are seeing so many sexualized images and they're learning so much about sex through like essentially pornographic stuff that, and they don't have a lot of adult, we're presuming, if they're not getting it at home from their parent, they're not getting talked to about this, even in a state like California, where there's probably like as good a comprehensive sex ed as you're going to get in this country. And
well, I mean, for starters, we don't do abstinence only education, which is quite nice.
Right. And usually our PE teachers sometimes teach it. But I've had, when I was younger, my science teacher taught it when I was in
sixth grade. So I think I've talked about this with you before on here, but I'm not sure. But I had mandatory health education all 4 years of high school.
Oh, that's cool.
And so my freshman year, it was like a combination of sex ed and healthy relationships and good eating habits, because mm-hmm. that's important too. Sophomore year was driver's education, and then junior and senior year were more advanced versions of the same thing as freshman year. Mm-hmm.
At my current school, I think that they have a health class as freshmen, and that's it. And that's pretty much where they get their sex ed.
That is exactly what we have as well, which I think you already knew.
Yeah, and then when I was in school, we had very good sex ed starting in like fifth grade, but that was a lot of like going through puberty and learning those kinds of things. And then we had it every year all the way through ninth grade, I believe, and then nothing. So like when you actually start to become sexually active, nothing.
Yeah, which is really interesting. I also, in this article, really appreciated the perspective. I wish I had written down the quote, but where the, I don't know if a lady or a man wrote this.
It was a woman, Peggy Orenstein.
Was talking about how sex ed relating to men focuses all about like erections, and with women it just relates to periods. And I just feel like compared to the other study they had in here with the Netherlands, it's just such a negative and clinical approach mm-hmm. rather than talking about how to be in a good relationship with someone and how to be respectful and maybe use that lovely L word of loving somebody. Mm-hmm. None of that gets discussed. And I wonder if like she has a point in the article that it really is just like the culture of our society where people are not comfortable talking about those things mm-hmm. or what?
Yeah. I mean, I think the reason why this article and like why I was feeling like it needed to be brought up, the like porn angle, is just that kids, you know, I mean, the students that we're teaching now are, you know, they're not hiding the Victoria's Secret catalog under their mattress like my husband did. I just outed you. But they have much more graphic pornography at their fingertips and things that are really violent. And that is often how many of them are learning that sex is, and rather than it being, you know, a healthy interaction between two people that are consenting. And I think my feeling, like, what is our role in it, is just that when you hear these things and you're, first of all, not their sex ed teacher, it's just like, I feel like as a teacher, and maybe it's just in this country, but like, I just feel like our prudish sort of like American ideals make us feel like it's just taboo. Like we're not supposed to talk about those things.
But I feel like you and I maybe are exceptions because you definitely know that I talk about them. I have two examples that I just thought of. Mm-hmm. Must have been like 4 years ago now, maybe 3 years ago, whenever 50 Shades of Grey was really super popular. I had a kid writing like a short story, like probably honestly about the five themes of geography. And he wanted to call it 50 Shades of whatever his country was. Yeah. And he was like, why can't I do that?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, I don't really know if you know what that story is about, but it's definitely not appropriate for you to be making an allegory of that story in this class.
Right.
And then last year, remember when that lovely, lovely air quotes, photo of Kim Kardashian came out with the champagne bottle.
Yeah.
Like all of my freshman students were talking about it. And while those things are not pornographic, it's about, you know, like creating, I don't know where I'm going with this.
Well, like okay, let me use the Kim example, right? So if that was mentioned in my classroom, I feel like it's okay to maybe correct a lot of things, but I always feel like I'm not comfortable taking it to the next level where I would say, like, let's talk about why we make all these judgments about Kim Kardashian's naked body and why, you know, she, like, why she made that choice and, like, what that, like, does that have any relationship to the choices you make about images you might choose to put on the internet? Like, I feel like those are conversations that would be really valuable to this generation. And yet it's not that I wouldn't feel comfortable discussing them. It's that I feel like depending on who your principal is, they might reprimand you for it.
I agree with that. And I mean, the conversation students had with me are like, did you see that? And I was like, yeah, I live in the real world. Of course I saw that.
Internet.
Duh. And so I wouldn't necessarily know how to begin to engage in that dialogue. And I feel like maybe there should be a way for students to do that.
Right.
But then I think about like, I don't know how sex ed is taught in this country. And like, I don't think those people are equipped to handle that really awesome conversation that you or I would have with each other.
Yeah.
With students.
Yeah. I think it's also a lot of our students are coming with, like, they're just ill prepared for that conversation. I don't want to generalize, but I can assume that many parents that we, or many children of the parents that we, you know, are in our school communities, like, may have not had these conversations with their child at an appropriate age. And I definitely think that if you have not talked to your kid by ninth grade about sex, you have waited way too long.
I agree. I don't know if my mom listens anymore, but mom, you did a great job. Thanks. So, when I used to teach US history, politics obviously comes up and they ask me like what my biggest issue is. And I always say campaign finance reform. And then I finally decided to ask a younger group of kids, like what their big issue is in politics.
Yeah.
And this one girl who I thought was by far more radical than me. And I was kind of surprised at first until she justified it herself, talked about reforming the porn industry.
Okay.
Like that was her biggest issue.
Yeah.
And it was because of how they treat workers and like what happens behind the scenes. And she felt like that was like the biggest political issue ever. And I don't know, when reading this article, I just thought about her the whole time.
How interesting.
And I was curious what she would have thought to know that most of her peers learn about sex from porn.
Yeah. That makes me sad.
Yeah.
Let's see. I talked about this like a few weeks ago on a podcast, but this article once again made me think of this book that just came out called...
The one I tried to look up and failed miserably?
It's called American Girls, Social Media and the Secret Lives of Teenagers by Nancy Jo Sales. It just came out and I really want to read it. I haven't read it yet, but I listened to her on Fresh Air and it was fascinating. Just like a lot of these kinds of topics and a lot of just the sexuality of teen girls and how it is basically being shaped by social media and also by, you know, the little camera that we have on our phone that flips around and can easily take naked pictures of ourselves without thinking about it.
Yeah. I guess I'm curious to see if this, I mean, one, how much is actually going to change? And two, I'm sure you did see, but in the article, it talked about how Obama, by the end of his presidency, was looking to defund all of the programs
that only
taught abstinence-only education, which was like,
yes,
good job. I think that would be the most powerful thing that you've done during your presidency. Not to belittle his presidency, but like clearly that issue is quite important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything else we forgot to talk about with regard to this?
I'm sure we could go on. I would just recommend reading it. It was in the Sunday Times. The article is called When Did Porn Become Sex Ed? And we will link to it on the Tumblr.
Anything exciting coming up this week?
Well, I have 2 more weeks before spring break. So, you know, the next time we do this podcast, I will be like a day away from going to Hawaii and I'll be very
beautiful.
Happy. But yeah, this week I'm actually going, a week from today, I'm going to the Teaching Tolerance Conference in LA at the Museum of Tolerance. So I'll be happy to report back on that. And it's the end of the quarter at my school. So it's a lot of just like culminating things, giving back writing and tests and all that stuff.
Yeah. I have a lot of AP grading to do.
Well, soon the test will be here and you won't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, no, but this is like their test that I have to grade.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. I should really get on that. I've been putting it off for a little bit of a time.
Yeah.
But just means that I'll focus all of my attention on it. And I'll be doing it at home, not
laser-like focus.
I can't concentrate on that serious grading at school.
Yeah. See, yeah. You're going to break your rule.
Well, I'm
pretty
being
hard
audited.
Not to with
like
me,
they like us. Yeah. There's just too many distractions at school.
Yeah.
Also even more at home, but that's okay cuz I could do it on the couch.
You have self-control at home though.
I do. I definitely do. Anyway, so you can find us all over the internet by searching for Teacher Besties Podcast on iTunes.
You can go to teacherbestiespodcast@tumblr.com.
Or you can send us an email at teacherbesties@gmail.com.
Yay.
Yay. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
How many acres, how much light, tucked in the woods and out of sight. Talk to the neighbors and tip my cap on a little rug belly.